Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey folks, before we get started with this episode of Positively Trek, I just want to drop this quick note. This is Dan from the future, currently editing this episode. It's a little bit late, and unfortunately that is because I have been sick the last few days. So apologies for no new Positively Trek in your podcatcher for the last little while, but hopefully we are back on track with new episodes. Thank you so much for your patience. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek. I'm one of your hosts, Dan Gunther, and with me, as always, to celebrate some really good news, which we're going to get to soon, Barry DeFord. Barry, how's it going?
Well, I'm a little worse for wear, but wearing it well, as Beck would say. I've managed to get a bit of a respiratory infection of unknown origin, and the tests are too old, so they don't matter anyway. It's just felt like I've kind of had a little ball of cotton just kind of in my upper respiratory tract for the last week or so. I've been working with younger folk, which has been just absolutely delightful. Kids just fill one with joy and are very recharging and just lovely human beings. And they say the darndest things.
So I'm told.
Yeah. But ultimately, it is also, you really do take your life into your hands. I have to doff my hat to all those who work with very young people. They're bags of disease, and they get you really sick.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get into that time of year, and I know people are probably sick to death of hearing it, but we have been warned. We've been warned by the people in the know that have paid lots of money for fancy degrees that we entrust with the knowledge of our society that this winter is going to be a bad one for flu and for COVID. So yeah, we're going to have to be on guard for that, be cautious, do the things that the smart people tell us to do.
Yeah.
And hopefully those of you out there will take heed that advice. And yeah, well, we'll move on from that. I confess to feeling a little bit of a tickle in my throat right now, too, as well as a bit of a headache. So something has struck our household. I'm thinking just a bad cold at the moment.
Yeah.
For the other member of my household, and hopefully that's all it is.
Yeah, hopefully wishing everyone who's feeling that tickle in their throat get some rest and do what you can, take care of yourself, and always try to be a good neighbor too. When I'm up in front of kids and stuff and I've got a hacking cough, I'll put a mask on just and say, like, I just don't want what's coming out of my mouth going up your nose, right?
Absolutely.
Ultimately, that's the point. So 100%. Anyways. Yeah, other than that, it's been a good start, and I'm excited to talk some Lower Decks, actually. I binge-watched it on Saturday morning, and you'd mentioned before we started recording that it's like watching Saturday morning cartoons, and I'm realizing, you know what else I did? I made myself pancakes.
Oh,
so
nice.
I ate pancakes and watched 3 episodes of Lower Decks.
Oh,
I can't
that sounds
say
amazing.
one could top a morning like that.
I don't think so. I think that's got just about everything I love right in there. That's awesome. So yeah, that's what we're going to be doing for our discussion, is talking about the first 4 episodes of Lower Decks. We're well into season 4 already. But before we do that, we're going to talk about some news. And as I said at the top, we've got some good news.
Yeah.
So Barry, you're in education, so you recently got back to work. And it sounds like there's another group of people who might be getting back to work very soon, and that is the writers of Hollywood. So the WGA strike has been going on since May 2nd. It's been a minute that these guys have been striking, that these wonderful folks who produce, who are the main drivers of the entertainment we watch, have been on those picket lines. And it sounds like a tentative deal has been reached. It's still, as of this recording, awaiting union approval. I have not seen any particulars of it, as those haven't been released to the public. I have seen posts on social media exclaiming things along the lines of, they agreed to everything, yay. Don't know how true that is, how reliable that is, but it sounds like people in the know are very excited about this deal. And hopefully it does give the writers everything they've asked for and deserve. So fingers crossed for that. That's really exciting news.
This analogy is going to fly over a lot of people's heads. But for you history nerds out there, I feel like an alliance of the Third Estate has taken place. very much in the sense that, you know, Seth MacFarlane donated $1 million. Then Meryl Streep, George Clooney, Spielberg, a number of A-list celebrities started shelling out to keep this strike going, to show that they weren't going to give up. And I think that's important because, I mean, first of all, this is a fraction of their worth and how much they can just sort of muster on their own. So yes, that is absolutely correct. But that is something to remark on, that what we're fighting for, I think, what was being fought for, I think is the better way of saying it now, were those actors who were trying to get into a stable income, right? Someone who isn't at the top, right? This isn't for the Hugh Jackmans or anything like that. It's for the people who are just, you know, making a living, doing what they love. And so I think it's important to always understand that. So I think it's important to also understand that money is important in this, that millionaires and billionaires can use their money for positive aims at a whim. So I think that's an interesting just kind of way to look at it.
Absolutely. So yeah, great news for the writers. Hopefully, again, as we say, at this point, at this hour that we're talking about it, it is tentative. And of course, the actors remain on strike. SAG-AFTRA is still on strike. No deal has been reached with them. This is just the WGA, the writers' strike. Hopefully that will follow on very soon after, though. I mean, it sounds like, I don't know. I don't want to make any speculation, but if they agreed to the WGA strike demands, I can't see them wanting the actors to stay on the picket lines for much longer. They're going to want to get those writers' rooms open and get that content flowing again. That'll make them all their pretty little pieces of paper that we've deemed are worth something in this society.
Yeah. I guess I'm mistaken there in the sense of where I'm kind of directing this. But I mean, there's also writers who are, you know, working day to day as well, just trying to make a living too. So in that respect, still solidarity from Positively Trek and, you know, actors who can afford it. Keep shelling out. Keep doing that. That's wonderful. Here. Keep that up because people got to eat.
Absolutely. Well, we spend our money on food. We got to eat, like you say. But, you know, us Star Trek fans spend our money on other things as well. Including Blu-rays of our favorite shows. Those of us who still cling to the physical media, as I do, I got to have my Trek on physical media. And there was a little bit of a stir in the fan community when the Picard Season 3 Blu-ray came out. And the little bit of the final episode with the Enterprise flyby at the beginning was a different version than people had seen on Paramount Plus. And this was interesting, reading a little bit more about what happened, why this happened, and also the fact that they're going to change this. They're going to make this right somehow. Apparently, the version that was on Paramount Plus, and this is kind of a little convoluted, but that version was made special for the theatrical release of the show, which they then ported into the Paramount Plus version, overwriting the original version, which is the version that's on the Blu-ray. So the Blu-ray is the original version that was going to be on Paramount Plus until they changed it with the theatrical version. But the cut that made it onto the Blu-ray was that original Paramount Plus version. Interestingly enough, I do remember when that first came out, some markets, I think overseas in Europe possibly, were saying that they had a different shot of the Enterprise and that, so they still had the old one, and it's all a kind of crazy thing. But yeah, they're going to update it to include this gorgeous nebula shot of the Enterprise that was aired on Paramount Plus. Did any of that make sense? I don't know. I think I kind of got it across.
Yeah, I read the article. I looked at the differences, and I mean, it's a substantially different shot, right? Like, substantially. I was actually, before we were hopped on here, I was watching a YouTube channel called Heavy Spoilers, and they were talking about the recent Return of the Jedi. It's a recent review of Return of the Jedi, and they were talking about the Lucas changes and stuff like that to things. And I was just sort of thinking to myself, it's like, oh, we're George Lucasing this now. Great. Perfect. Yeah. I don't know. The inclination to change it seems bizarre to me. Theatrical releases and all that sort of stuff, are strange to me as well, that they wouldn't make it the same, but I'm just glad they seem to want to rectify this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good thing. This is a total side discussion, but this has entered my head, like, for people out there who are true, like, canon, if it, like, everything has to be canon, blah, blah, blah. Like, what did the Enterprise look like when it flew by in that shot? Was it that first shot or was it the second shot? Which one's canon? I'm just kidding. Good God. No. Then we got to ask,
what have you done?
Is the director's edition of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan the canon events, or is the theatrical version?
Ooh, you know,
okay, can of worms. Oh, it's open. There's worms everywhere. Good God.
I have to say, I have an Eagle Moss Reliant, and it broke in its package, but I don't believe it broke because the wrong nacelle came off. So that's not canon. So that didn't happen.
Ah, darn it. Yeah.
But umch.
That dreaded C word rears its ugly. No, I'm just kidding. But interesting that they're going to fix this. And also future releases of the Blu-ray will have the problem fixed already, which is good news for those overseas, because the release date, I believe, is November 20th in some markets. So it hasn't been released yet in all places. And when you get it, it should be fixed. So that's cool.
The tangled web we weave.
It's wild. What a world. Well, okay. Speaking of Blu-rays.
Now, this is cool.
This is very cool. We have Star Trek Strange New Worlds coming out, Season 2, coming on Blu-ray and 4K in December. So I was really excited when Season 1 of Strange New Worlds was released in 4K, because I actually went and bought a 4K player a while ago because of the motion picture director's edition coming out on 4K. And I was like, oh, I want to see that. I still haven't gotten that yet. I haven't watched it yet, unfortunately. But I did get Season 1 of Strange New Worlds in 4K. And I'm really excited they're doing Season 2 in 4K as well. Kind of sad that none of the other series are getting that. I'd love to see Picard Season 3 in 4K, but that's a whole nother discussion.
Right.
But yeah, Barry, are you going to be picking up Strange New Worlds Season 2 in December?
Well, I'm actually transferring over to hard media, actual owned copies, and that is because I am tired of being a nomadic fandom. I need an island. So I think, yeah, I am probably going to be looking into getting myself a Blu-ray player, and our TV, the family TV, is just getting ready to give up the ghost, we're thinking. So Christmas time, this might just be right in time, I think. Might be a wonderful way to crack in the new year. And if I don't get a 4K TV, I will come over to your house. I just learned an amazing recipe for air-fried chicken thighs.
Oh, chicken thighs in Strange New Worlds. I mean,
oh yeah, man.
Second only to pancakes and Lower Decks. I mean, this is great.
Yeah. I think we can now start comparing what food goes best with what episodes of Star Trek.
Oh man. Yeah. I'm there for that. Let's do an episode on that. That sounds great.
All right. Folks in the Facebook, let us know what you think. Should we do a couple of episodes chosen, and then we'll say what food pairs best.
Definitely. Speaking of Blu-rays, this week you can finally get Star Trek Prodigy Season 1.5, episodes 11 to 20, anyway, coming out on Blu-ray this week. So very excited about that. Finally, somewhere you can legally watch Star Trek Prodigy. It's, you know, not being streamed. It is being sold, I think, like digitally on Amazon and places like that. But you can finally get that as home media in your hot little hands. So I just wanted to mention that. Those of you who were waiting, if you didn't know, that is out as of this episode coming out. So go pick that up too. Hashtag save Star Trek Prodigy.
Hashtag.
Other things you can buy. We got a lot of news this week, and I was kind of thinking of leaving this one off because it's, you know, whatever, but I think this is really cool. I think this deserves a place on the news here. There's a series of fine art Star Trek prints coming out this Thursday, this week. Vice Press is behind this, putting out these posters, and they're starting with a new Star Trek The Motion Picture poster coming this week. And I've got a link in the show notes. Go check that out. This is gorgeous. Yeah. Like some of the first things I ever collected in quote marks, I don't know, but the first things that I had that were Star Trek that were mine were posters, I think, back in the day up in my bedroom wall. And oh my goodness, like this is absolutely beautiful. I love this.
Showing the Japanese foil one too,
mm-hmm,
was just beautiful. And yeah, I would love to get my hands on a print like this, framed, really nice. It's just so cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
The artistic style is very 80s. I love it. Or late 70s. But
yeah, it's very artistic. We've got this Ilea probe is basically kind of the centerpiece, standing in this, you know, kind of V'ger surrounding her, the various parts that make up the huge V'ger complex, with the Enterprise heading towards her / all of it in the center. And of course, the human adventure is just beginning, that evocative tagline of the film. I love this. This is, I'm really on the fence. Like I might have to get this. I love Star Trek art and this is beautiful.
It's like I said, it's a stunning piece of art, and I'm looking forward to following this series. I think it'll be neat to see what's coming up next.
Yeah, definitely. So something else recently released that I am very eager to get my hands on is the Patrick Stewart autobiography, Making It So, a memoir. Now, I know, Barry, we talked about this previously. You were wanting to get the audiobook, yes, read by Sir Patrick Stewart himself. Have you had a chance to pick this up yet?
Not yet. I carpool. So we are actually doing a different audiobook right now. But I've realized that everybody in the vehicle are also fans of Star Trek one way or another. And so I really feel like I could probably get this one slipped in. And if not, I'll just drive myself. I think it'll be worth it. No, I'm definitely going to be picking it up right away. And I'm totally stoked. I do also think I will get a print copy as well. I'd like to get it a book as well. A nice hardcover would be quite wonderful.
Yeah, it's, it would be a beautiful book to have on the shelf. I've kind of, since I was young, I've read autobiographies by Star Trek actors. If you could see me right now on the shelf behind me, I have Nichelle Nichols. I even read, you know, William Shatner's Star Trek Memories back in the day. And then I think I actually have his second one, Star Trek Movie Memories. There's a lot of interesting stories about the lives of the people that we love in Star Trek. And I can't think of a life more interesting, I think, in Star Trek than Sir Patrick Stewart. That could be a lot of fun for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm going to put it right next to my autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard.
Definitely. A great pairing there.
I really enjoyed that book. That was a wonderful read. I've read that a few times now.
Yeah. I wanted to mention also the autobiography of Benjamin Sisko, which is coming out later this year. I think that one's release date's been moved a few times. It was pushed back to December, and then I think it's been pushed back up to November now. So
really?
Yeah. So I'll have to look into that exactly. And we'll definitely talk about that when it comes out too, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we should have a read and merry book club with Positively Trek for that.
Definitely. Absolutely.
I'd rock some Sisko.
For sure. I wanted to ask you, Barry, there's this weird anomaly that's appeared in the Star Trek milieu of shows. Very short treks. Have you watched these?
Nah.
Okay.
I'm in a snit. And it's basically because nobody who has seen it has liked it. So I am taking kind of the lead from everyone else and maybe just not bothering for now. And just thinking like this was more important than Prodigy, hey? Cool. Cool, Paramount. That's real cool.
Yeah. Wow. When you put it like that, that makes me very sad. But
this is positively Trek.
So there have been three of them released and I have watched them all. That first one, I do have to say, apologetically, it left a very bad taste in my mouth. The next two, I think were genuinely funny. Like I kind of chuckled at them a bit. I wish they hadn't started with that first one. Without having seen it, I don't know if this will make sense, but like the central message of it felt antithetical to what Star Trek is about. And when you start off on that foot, that's not a good foot. But I see what they were doing. If nothing else, it was a joke that just went on too long. Yeah, the other two are kind of funny. And I mean, it's fun to hear Ethan Peck as Spock or Bruce Horak as Hammer in the second one. And the third one, to hear Jonathan Frakes and Gates McFadden reprising their characters, even in something as ridiculous as that one. I don't know. It's worth a watch, but I wouldn't worry too much about it if you don't check them out.
Yeah. How long are they each? Like 5 minutes, 10 minutes?
About five to 6 minutes, I think. That's just a guess based on remembering watching them and not really paying attention.
Your average Guns N' Roses song. That's fine. I can handle that. I can stomach that.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we are going to talk about Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you so much for downloading this episode of Positively Trek. We truly do appreciate each and every one of our listeners, and I'd like to especially thank our Patreon supporters. Thank you to our Constitution Class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Marin, and Paul D. Kinnear. If you'd like to become a supporter of Positively Trek and join our crew, please go to patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can get early access to episodes, exclusive content, shoutouts, associate producer credits, ad-free episodes, and more. Again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you all, and live long and prosper. So we're four episodes into season four, probably five by the time you're listening to this. We have Tuvix, I Have No Bones Yet I Must Flee, which nomination for best Star Trek episode title ever, In the Cradle of Vexilon, and Something Borrowed, Something Green, with Empathological Fallacies coming out this week as we record this. So I'm gonna say right off the top, I think a very strong start to season four.
Yep.
Strong start insofar as the four episodes as a whole, I think. With each episode in some ways getting better than the episode before it. In kind of almost a paradoxical way, which I'll talk about when we get to kind of the specific episodes. But I'm really digging this season. And now, you've watched it in a very compressed time period. So how are you feeling about season four?
I felt a little like a moopsie by the end of I Have No Bones Yet I Must Flee, because by that point I had snarfed down about four pancakes of reasonable size, shall we say. I've enjoyed it. It's been good. And I think that I think you've actually explained it really well, that they kind of get better each one going, but in sort of a paradoxical way. I do think that deep down, Lower Decks is actually really trying to tickle your brain quite a bit, not just with all of the member berries and callbacks and, you know, kind of normalization of what was otherwise kind of a unique event in an episode of Star Trek, the original series. So, yeah, I think that ultimately this has been really fun, and I'm interested to see where this goes, I guess you could say. And I've kind of got a prediction kind of at the end of this.
Yeah, I feel like these episodes, they tickle your brain. That's a really good way to put it. And I think there's a different levels on which to watch this show. And I think there's a very surface level. But if you dig below that, these are deeper and more meaningful than I think some people might be willing to give them credit for, if that makes sense. And I mean, even in the titles of the episodes, like, they had fun with the titles this season. I Have No Bones, Yet I Must Flee.
Very Discovery.
Yes, very Discovery, but riffing on the Harlan Ellison short story, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, right?
Yes.
Like, brilliant, brilliant. In the Cradle of Vexilon, In the Cradle of Vexation. I love this. And there's more coming up later this season that I won't spoil. The titles are, there's one in particular that's terrific. But they keep doing this and it's wonderful.
It's great. And there's some interesting, maybe we can just start kind of with Tuvix, first, just as the sort of swan song to Voyager that it was, where they just basically took us on some kind of like Universal Studios ride of all of the things that went down on Voyager, but like pressed through the filter of, Lower Decks, which was a, I mean, for me, I didn't get all of the the specifics and stuff like that. But, you know, it's interesting that they started on Voyager, I think, ultimately, because what does Voyager represent in a lot of ways? You know, like it's an exception to the rule. A lot of people used to kind of riff that, oh, Deep Space Nine was like the neglected one. But I'm going to put it out there that Voyager is the neglected Star Trek series, because I have neglected it. So at least in my perception, it definitely is. So I think it was really good that they did that. But also, one thing that I think this season is really trying to impress on us, if you do want to kind of get your brain tickled, is what it means to grow up in a lot of ways, what it means to, you know, be accountable, and what it means to be part of something bigger than yourself, I guess, is a better way of putting it. Would you agree that this kind of brings that into being as we see the promotions take place and stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I feel like the promotions were such a great breath of fresh air into this series, into a series that even I don't think needed a breath of fresh air necessarily, but like the opportunity for story ideas in bringing those themes to life. Like Boimler in this episode, before he's promoted, like that kind of realization that he has with Mariner, and you know, that he should go save the ship, and he has what it takes to save the ship. And, you know, he doesn't need to worry about the things that happened before when he was promoted and stuff. That's, you know, Mariner actually, you know, put him up for promotion kind of thing. And he's given this opportunity to grow. And then over the course of the next few episodes, we see what that means and coming to terms with that, you know, like, oh, promotion. Yay. That's great. I'm climbing the ranks. Oh, what does that actually mean though? What does that mean for your responsibilities? What does that mean for your relationships with people who were your peers but are no longer? All of that sort of thing I think is really fascinating. And it's really a credit to this show that it explores those topics in a way that's deeply meaningful while still, you know, giving us the full-throated belly laughs. But when you really absorb the message of the show, it's deep and it's very meaningful and relevant to the lives of people watching, I think.
Well said. Honestly, that was really, really brought together well. And I think, you know, seeing all of the little callbacks and stuff like that came from Voyager, I think it's fitting. And it also sucks that still poor Harry Kim, is not promoted while we see even the lower decks folks, of course, except obviously Rutherford, but that gets resolved later, and a few other things get resolved too later. So I think other than this interesting kind of attack at the end that takes place with this mystery ship, are you recognizing this ship at all?
No, it's definitely something we've never seen quite exactly before. There's certain elements that people have said, oh, it looks kind of like this. It's shaped a little bit like an Enterprise era shuttle pod. It has little things on it that look like the Romulan drone ship. But I'm not, I think it's meant to be something completely new, I think.
Well, part of me, I mean, obviously there's sort of a initial, even when you see the Klingons, I think they kind of hint a little bit at the TMP music, which is for me, my favorite Klingon music. There was a bit of that as it's coming out of as the Warbird is coming out of the nebula. But I wonder if there might be some kind of a connection to a V'ger or Nomad like object potentially here.
That could be. I've seen speculation, and this makes a lot of sense to me, that the thing it's doing, the beam that it's using, is maybe not killing the people we've seen, but maybe storing them, which would feel very V'ger-esque in that case, or possibly transporting them somewhere or something. Now, we do see debris from the ships, so the ships are not surviving, but I'm hoping those characters are surviving. The Klingons, for example, that Klingon captain is from the episode from season 2, Wei Duge, the lower decker who becomes the captain of that ship. And, you know, I hope they weren't just wiped out. Like, the biggest body count for a season of Lower Decks so far then.
Well, one thing I have to say about this season in general is, again, we rag on Discovery for being violent, but when you actually think about this kind, like the stuff that happens, right? Like, how do they stop the Moopsie? By cracking teeth. Like, what? That's absolutely, like, what the heck? So I do think to some degree there's a lot of violence in this show. So even though it's animated, you know, maybe it's not quite for the faint of heart. Also at the end, when everyone's merged together, I really feel like they took the philosophy of the whole the whole Neelix thing. Right. And I feel like they just like rammed it down our throat. Like we're like a goose and we're frog foie gras or something. Cause like they made it so ethically clear what needed to happen at the end. Like they just completely messed the whole thing up to a point where you had to bring everybody back and therefore you didn't have to worry about killing anybody. So part of me wonders if maybe that was the writer's sort of like, shut up to everyone about the whole thing. I'll just completely turn this into basically Tetsuo from Akira, if you folks know. And then we'll see what happens, which was, I was kind of hoping that was going to happen, that he might just like turn into a glowing something and that'd be it.
I thought their approach to the whole, you know, ethical thing about Tuvix from Voyager was a good one, because there's some initial shock that she just straight up murdered the guy. But then there's also, you know, the kind of like, well, she was far from home and didn't have the resources of Starfleet and blah, blah, blah. For the record, by the way, everybody acts like this is the biggest moral thing in Star Trek to argue about. No, Janeway did nothing wrong, I think. I mean, maybe not nothing wrong, but like, I think it was clear it was a trolley problem issue. You're saving two. The fact that he was not willing to have that happen to him introduces a little bit of like, but I mean, Sisko destroyed the atmosphere of a planet and killed a Romulan senator to bring them into the war. And I don't know. I can't get too arsed about losing Tuvix. Sorry, guy was creepy. Just kidding. That's bad.
Yeah. I guess like ultimately, the episode sets a really cool tone as well about this sort of like in the background menace that's just going to keep teasing us, I think, until we see the end. Which again, I'm always worried about the anticlimax, right? Of it, you know, not landing or something. But I do have to say Lower Decks has been really good for me seeing it land. And I do hope that Klingon captain didn't just get murked right off the bat, right?
I hope not. Yeah, I kind of liked those characters. You know, Cheese saving the day, that was fun too, I guess. Should remark on that. But yeah, I have no bones, yet I must flee. Again, that is just just the best episode title. Like, whoever came up with that, I hope, you know, chef's kiss. You get a bonus for that. But yeah, this was another, I think, great character episode. Mariner in this one, a little bit of a sitcom-y setup where she hears something and misinterprets it. Usually not my favorite kind of plot, but I feel like this episode earns it a little bit.
It does.
It really feeds into her psychology as a character. This is not a simple, you know, oh, this is the episode of Three's Company where somebody misunderstands somebody and something funny happens, which is all of them. That's the joke, I guess. but this one really works with her relationship with Jack Ransom and that final conversation between her and Ransom where he's like, you always sabotage your promotions. And she's, no, I don't. And he's like, well, what are you doing right now? And she's like, well, shut up. And really actually starts to confront that. Why do I do that? And Ransom's like, I don't know, but I'm going to support you. And I love that. In the live show where Brandy and I talked about this episode, we came to the realization that this is kind of the first time that we realize why Ransom is where he is. This is why he's a first officer. He's been kind of a laughingstock up to now. We don't, you know, we laugh at him and that sort of stuff. He's a good first officer. He's a good commander. And, oh, that's why he's there. Okay.
Yeah. No, he used to just be kind of like the Riker Kirk riff. But, no, there was a lot of character development. Also, he literally let his a subordinate officer knock his teeth out. which again, is a hell of a lot of trust. And I do think that it gives Mariner a chance to be seen, I guess, also literally where he's like, Voyagers, cameras everywhere, which is funny as well. But he really does sort of set her off into a really positive character development, and something that I think, you know, being an educator, I think geniuses do this a lot. They're sort of bored. They kind of know the score, and it's very easy to coast. And seeing Mariner coast the way she has, and now finally getting these opportunities to rise to the occasion in a way that's actually going to give her the recognition she's always sort of deserved.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Who would win, Moopsie or Ripper?
Ooh, I don't know. How bony is Ripper?
Well, that's the thing. Does Ripper have bones?
Yeah, that's the question. That's the real question.
Yeah, tardigrade. I don't know. I don't think they have bones.
I feel like
they're an exoskeleton, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Does that count? Would that be edible? I don't know. I feel like Ripper would take a swipe at Moopsie and it would just like fly and bounce off the wall with a squeak and
yeah.
probably be no worse for wear. So
yeah. And just sort of waddle off in another direction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oopsie.
I did see a great meme where it was Admiral April contacting Captain Pike saying, we have a secret weapon to fight the Gorn. What is it? We call it the Moopsie.
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah. No, I think it also does an interesting little riff on human beings at the end as well, that we are actually the most dangerous animal in the universe, which I felt like really went under the radar in terms of the entire bit of the story. But that just sort of stuck in my head of like, huh, that was a little wag of the finger there, wasn't it?
A little bit. And yeah, not just, you know, TNG would kind of waggle their finger at, you know, 20th century humans, but turns out we're still dicks. So
yeah. Womp, womp.
Yeah, not good. Darn humans. I guess there's also the B plot of this episode with Boimler trying to find suitable quarters.
Yeah, a good B plot. I love a cartoon with a good B plot. Like, honestly, that season 1 to 8 of The Simpsons, perfect. One to eight, A B plots, just wonderful stuff. So yeah, this was a really good one. I liked it. Good bromance. Yeah. Bromance B plots are best B plots.
Well, I've always wondered, you know, you see like on the Enterprise D or whatever, there's like the navigational light, the big huge strobe that's like flash, flash, right? And there's windows right next to that. And I was like, who's in those quarters? And like, But yeah, no, there's, of course, there's just like a little shade that comes down and probably in real time reacts to whatever's going on outside to keep it a neutral. Of course that makes sense. And of course Rutherford would know that. And that when he first walks in and the Bassard collectors are just like glowing like crazy. That was wonderful.
I enjoyed it just for the sake that how one can react to change, right? And and how everything can seem like a really, really big deal. But if you actually, you know, take time and look for what you need, you're going to get more of what you want anyway in the end, right? And I think that was, you know, the big piece of that I really enjoyed.
And the other plot in this episode, I guess, maybe the C plot, or maybe it's the B plot and Boimler's the C plot. I don't know. But I forgot to put this in the notes, but Rutherford trying to get promoted to catch up with all of his friends. Funny in and of itself. And apparently there's this Livick guy who's this nemesis, kind of a Newman-esque nemesis on the ship. But the resolution to that was so great, where Tandy yells, "Hey, can Rutherford get his promotion for taking all the hull panels off the ship that one time? Oh yeah, sure. Here you go." Tosses him the pip. And Rutherford's line, "You mean I can just ask for what things I deserve?"
Yeah.
And, you know, Billups says, "Yeah, I guess so." Continuing what I think has been kind of a theme with some of Rutherford's stories, which is going back to season one, which is that workplaces in the 24th century are so much better than they are now. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember back to season one, where he was trying out the different departments, right? And he had to tell Billups that he was going to try something else. And Billups, "You're going to what? I'm so happy for you. You got to follow your dreams." And then same thing with Shax, right? I love that. That was totally to point out how toxic workplace culture is today. And Rutherford's line there, "I can just ask for things I deserve." Yep. What a world that would be.
Well, and I think that when you live, and I think it's mentioned later in the season, but when Mariner is talking about, you know, "Well, I'm also from a post-scarcity world." I think that was when she was getting traveled around on the little palanquin things in the in Something Borrowed, Something Green.
Yeah.
But I think that is in a place where there isn't necessarily people there because they've got to like fulfill some kind of like necessity for life now. Like those things are covered and taken care of. I think you actually find people will rise to new occasions and stuff. When people have the ability to have all their basic needs met, it makes them able to act in these sorts of ways where they can encourage people to reach for their interests and, you know, test things out and stuff. There isn't as much risk, right? You can't just go from job to job. That doesn't look good. Don't do that. You know, that sort of stuff. And I mean, I think there is something to be said for a consistent lifestyle, but I mean, I remember when I bounced around and stuff like that, and there might be bouncing left in my life. So I think this adds to that, as you've said, in the sense that people who work hard can advocate for themselves in positive and constructive ways. And it is sometimes just finding your voice help, and other people can help you find that voice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I would love to think that people seeing that this episode would maybe go like, "I should ask for what I deserve and I should expect to get what I deserve." And also just the fact that Rutherford turned down a whole bunch of promotions just to keep hanging out with, you know, the group, but let's be honest, Tandy, that's adorable. And like, ah, Rutherford, you idiot, I love you.
I actually think it masks a type of anxiety that's somewhere around a level of codependence. No, I'm kidding. No, I think it is just meant to be sweet in this case. I don't think we necessarily need to read into it like that. And I just said that to be kind of a dork for a second.
But
I do think, you know, again, it is this idea that sometimes we can sort of stall ourselves in places for the sake of comfort and for the sake of familiarity. And I don't know, maybe sometimes that's not a bad thing, right? Like, you know, climbing that ladder, if you're happy where you are, then maybe that's okay. I'm always brought back to the song "I'm Gonna Soak Up the Sun" by Sheryl Crow, where she says, it's not about getting what you want, it's about wanting what you've got. And I think that's a really good way of putting it. And I think them all progressing together as one unit, as a cohort, is actually an extremely formative and character building, team building sort of thing. If you want a good crew, then they need to grow together. They can't go popping off like little popcorn kernels in different directions, right? They need a unified path, I think, in a lot of ways. So I think this is how you make a good bridge crew, ultimately.
Ah, that's great. Now I want to see, like, I know Picard's done, but something set in that era, and like these four are, well, five if you throw in T'Lyn, because we're going to talk about her, are part of the bridge crew of whatever ship show up. That would be wonderful.
Well, I think we got a few more seasons coming. And, you know, I mean, the name might be a little anachronistic by the end, but who cares?
Well, let's move on. We've got In the Cradle of Vexilon, our Ringworld episode, which, you know, that's kind of wonderful. We've got a non-subjugating computer, which is fun. And they keep worrying that he's going to go that way, but no, he never does. And Boimler's first away team command, which this might be my favorite Boimler episode so far. The kind of lesson he learns and what he goes through with T'Lyn here. Wonderful growth for his character here.
If you dare to fight, you dare to win. And if you put yourself in these situations, you have to accept the facts, right? And I think that's a really hard lesson that Boimler wins in the end, I think. And then in that moment where he tells them, you know, get out of here, you know, and T'Lyn's response, understanding what he's doing, you know, it doesn't really matter to me that the stakes were just completely lowered. Like, I didn't even think he was dead to begin with.
You never forget your first.
Yeah. And the koala. And I thought that was quite amusing and everything like that. But again, it's a really good lesson of, like, you cannot be in control of everything all the time. So, and if you try, you're going to burn yourself out and alienate the people who could help you.
Absolutely. T'Lyn says, I got to put you guys in danger, so let's do this.
Yeah, right.
That's not how I would have worded the lesson. So, speaking of T'Lyn, I love her in this episode and the next especially, but what a wonderful addition to this show. I think, like, no wonder. I think the series of events was, she showed up in that season 2 episode, and everybody absolutely loved her. They had already written and probably recorded most of season 3. And they said, oh yeah, we're totally going to bring her back. And she's in like the last 5 seconds of season 3. I think they just like stuck her there. And then it was like, okay, now we've got her for season 4. I love this character. I love her so much.
Yeah. And she really does like stick in extremely good ways to the Vulcan way, I guess. Like, I don't know, she still manages to get those Vulcan jabs in, though, which I just absolutely love throughout. And she actually, at first, I'm like, she's kind of a jerk sometimes. Like, she can actually get really cutting to these people. Holy crap, T'Lyn. But again, yeah, no, she's there for a really good purpose. And she's really just blended right into the rest of the group pretty well. And yeah, for me, my big moment is obviously when she, you know, understands what Boimler is about to do. And she goes ahead.
The lieutenant gave you an order. Yeah.
Yeah. I really, really appreciated that, especially.
And the little nod between her and Boimler in that moment. That was wonderful.
And I think we're going to get more of a backstory from her moving forward. I think they've already kind of hinted at it, that she's sort of like an academic refugee from the Vulcan Academy kind of thing. And she's over in the Federation world. And I think, you know, as most Vulcans might, she sees that as a bit of a negative or possibly as a demotion. But also you realize she's learning more about herself and everything else. Can I just say, just with this specific episode, the first piece that I got from this was the, when they come to the ring world, I'm hearing that, like the Halo music, seeing that. It was kind of a neat little piece. And then also, I can't get away from the Futurama episode where Bender makes out with one of these kinds of computers. I'm just a man-puter fembot living in a man-puter manbot world or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah, anyways, I like how we can riff on you know, some pretty wackadoo writing from the 60s still to this day.
So the secondary, the B plot of this episode, we have Tendi, Mariner, and Rutherford getting hazed, which I enjoyed. There's some nice callbacks there. I actually really love the Move Along Home episode, so that was fun. But not a lot of depth, I think, to that story. It's a little bit more sitcom-y than we've seen. So there's this thing that's happening this season where I think the A plots are getting continuously stronger and stronger and stronger, and the B plots are getting weaker and weaker and weaker.
They're getting callbackier and callbackier.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like the Lower Decks of previous seasons was more callbacky than it is currently. And I do like that Lower Decks is doing more callbacks to its own lore and stuff, which is fun.
Yeah.
Even just the throwaway line when they're in the anomaly room. That's the hat that turned Billups into a church tower.
Right.
Like, what? I don't know. That really tickled me.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of the callbacks and that kind of thing. But it's also the depth of the story a little bit is getting a little bit shallower. Which, again, paradoxically, I'm still thinking each episode is better and better because the A-plots just keep getting stronger and stronger. And again, it's only a sample size of 4 of the 10 episodes we're going to get. But it's just a slight pattern that I've started to notice emerging that may turn out to not be a pattern at all because of the small sample size. But it's interesting.
It does sort of come off as like a time-limited obstacle course, ultimately. And to some degree, they sort of build the obstacle course in front of you, especially with the whole room situation. There are some pieces in that, watching Rutherford just like skip through the Deep Space Nine game, Alamarine.
Come on.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny. We need to talk about this Bajoran gift box.
The beta Betazoid gift box.
The Betazoid gift box. We need to talk about it because it had an inner light with life, and it gets no time to process it.
So, like, these guys aren't sentient, are they? No, they just repeat phrases they've heard. So he had a whole, like, gift box family on Catan, and, like, look at his face. When Rutherford's leaving... And this shot is literally a second and a half long. There's a shot of it on its back, on Rutherford's back, and he's just like 1,000-yard stare. That is the funniest and most tragic thing ever.
How will he play the flute? He has no hands. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
I just think to myself, like, how, as the, you know, they're just sort of squirreling through these, but you can just see, like, they must have really had a laugh setting up some of these things. Also, like, what they were planning to do to that lieutenant guy, my goodness, like, they were going to throw him in the game, they were going to inner light him. Like, what else was in there? Like,
yeah. Like, the game one, that's a bit of fun, I think. Provided, as we learn, that his childhood trauma was a fiction. That wasn't real, thankfully. That's funny. The inner light thing, like, first of all, I know TNG is a week-to-week series and stuff, and they actually revisited it a couple times, which is amazing to me. But, like, how would somebody go through that without years of therapy to get past that? They're just going to do that to this guy in a one-off.
I think that's what makes it just so absolutely surreal in its funniness and in that kind of shock humor. Let's hope he makes it.
Yeah.
But absolutely. Yeah, the hazing was fine. The end, you know, a little sitcom-y, you're right.
Well, that brings us to the fourth episode, Something Borrowed, Something Green, which is my favorite episode so far this season because of that A-plot. We've got, in Mariner's words, a triple threat girls trip to Orion. Mm-hmm. And as Mariner outright states, this is more backstory than we've gotten from Tendi in the last 3 years.
Nice and self-referential.
Absolutely. It is so good. And I mean, none of what we find out in this episode is a surprise. Like, we've figured this out about Tendi, like the other characters have. Yeah. She's like, guys, I have something to admit. I was trained as an assassin. Yeah, we know. Yeah. We know Tendi. Uh-huh. It's fine.
Yeah.
But it's so well done. Like, even on the level of exploring another culture of people that we've seen since the very beginning, like, let's absolutely explore Orion and bring it up to the levels of Vulcan or Bajor or Kronos. You know, like, I love this kind of deep dive into the culture, which, done in the, you know, wacky backdrop of Lower Decks, yeah, there's some things that are enhanced and kind of made more animated, ha ha ha. Tee-hee. But it's also, it feels like a real culture that one of our main characters came from. And I loved it. I loved every minute of that part of this episode.
Well, again, I think it has to do a lot with people in different cultures, their inborn natures in a lot of ways. And in certain cases, you can sort of sometimes not feel like you fit, right? And how do you manage that if you don't fit? And so I think that that's really explored well. And then of course, Tendi's sister, Devana is her name, right?
De Erica. Tendi is Devana.
Yeah, Devana, right. Sorry. Ugh. I'm so bad with names, Dan. It's the worst. Anyway, yeah, De Erica is living in the shadow, right, of this sort of like never was but better than you always older sister. Whereas in it very sort of like similarly as Mariner did when she went nuts in the holodeck that one time, De Erica kind of proves herself wrong through actually finally challenging the person who she feels she's cast in the shadow of. And I think that's an important thing for people to do. It's important to understand that, you know, having heroes isn't necessarily bad, but know that you're not meant to live up to anybody's standard but your own. And mm-hmm. obviously that's I think kind of what I get out of that whole story arc about De Erica. About Tendi, however, Devana, I think there's something about, though you may not feel like you fit, don't necessarily throw everything about what you are out as well, right? There's always, mm-hmm. there's something to salvage. There's something to understand in yourself. I've actually kind of done that myself. I have Irish heritage and have never really meaningfully looked into it. And I've just started really looking in now. And I found some really interesting tidbits about myself in ways that I just had never really thought about. So it's pretty cool. And I think this episode does a good job of doing that.
Yeah. Again, if you're looking for it, if you're looking under the surface, there's some deeply meaningful lessons to be had here. And it's done in such a fun way, like this exploration of this culture and Tendi's embarrassment at it, which is, you know, not, I think, warranted, but in the eyes of the people she sees as her friends, this is a part of her life that she wants to hide. She, as she says, doesn't want them to see the real her. And as Mariner says, Tendi, the real you is the one who geeks out about science. And, you know, all of this stuff is a part of you, but it's not all you are. Like, you are all these other things as well. And we love you. Like, you're amazing. And you're really cool and kick ass, apparently.
Yeah, right.
So I loved it. And we have to talk about Talin in this episode as well, because this is my favorite Talin episode. She is like, from the very beginning where she's like, I would like to look at their aquifers.
Yeah.
You know, but then like, you know, wow, for someone who's so, you know, such a big piece of beefsteak, he sure can move fast or whatever. He is aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, I like that. I've loved that statement.
So good. As, you know, her former Vulcan commander in that other episode would say, you have lost all control.
Yeah. Oh, no, it, the, the whole society, obviously, knowing Orion is a matriarchal kind of pirate society, is an entertaining riff and a really good way to kind of take a lot of those roles and put them on their heads. Just recently, another Trek YouTuber, Junkball Media, just did a thing on the Scant. And I thought that was really interesting because there was a lot of intention at the beginning of TNG to challenge a lot of gender norms and stuff like that. And so though I think this one is a bit more safe in the sense that really women in a lot of cases are sort of just occupying the roles that men might have in the past, or we could say, you know, pirate women might have occupied this role at certain points in the Caribbean pirate era in like the 1500s to the late 1700s kind of idea. It's still fun to watch. I like the riff on the matriarchal society, how men are cast and portrayed, and everything like that. What did you feel about that? Did you think it was done well?
I think so. And I mean, it's a nice kind of connecting the dots, I guess, or maybe crossing the T's and dotting the I's of what we've seen of Orion culture before, where, you know, I think Enterprise kind of tried to repair some of what TOS had done with the green animal women who actually like being abused, according to the cage, right? Which is, geez, what a place to start from, right?
Yeah.
But then, you know, there's the revelation that it's the women who control the men, but it was kind of done in a really weird, like, gotcha moment way, where you're like, how does this actually work? Like, how does that square with what we've seen? And I feel like this episode does a really good job of kind of squaring that circle. Is that the right term? Where it kind of makes that make sense and works and feels like Enterprise did the, like, the women are in charge, as the, like, whoa, wild, how crazy moment, which is in and of itself kind of gross and problematic. But this makes more sense. I mean, you communicate so much in just the introduction of her parents. This is the warrior queen Shona and Burt. Burt.
But he seems just thrilled to be Burt, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like
just totally content to do his thing. And I think, you know, it's interesting because I don't think it makes the men on Orion any less masculine. Right. Like, they could lift you over their head, they could crack you over their knee, they could do anything any man could, but it is just sort of the superstructure of society is flipped in such a way that the matriarchal element of it has that power. And I think that's just, it's a fun way to kind of riff on things. And if anything, I hope it pulls some people a little bit out of their comfort zone and, you know, get other people sort of imagining, well, what would actually a truly matriarchal society really look like, right? What sort of aspects would be different? And can we look to history to see if there are other matriarchal societies and are there contemporary ones that exist? So that one actually kind of got me thinking, and a couple of the Star Trek people I have in my life right now, I've brought this question up and, yeah, sort of actually trying to envision what that might look like.
Well, I mean, the B plot of this one, we have Boimler and Rutherford arguing over misting a bonsai and then dressing up as Mark Twain to resolve their differences, which in and of itself was fun. It was amusing. Once you get the Chalnoff captain and Captain Freeman dressed up in that as well, I feel like they kind of lost the plot a little bit there.
It jumped the shark at that point. You're right.
A little bit. Yeah. Which again is amazing that this is still my favorite episode up to this point, because that A story is so good. But yeah, this was the first B plot where I was kind of like, I don't know.
So this gets me thinking, and maybe we can use this to think ahead to what this series is going to bring us. And that is that could Lower Decks, as you're saying, the A plots are getting really, really nice and they're really starting to solidify, but these B plots are starting to kind of dangle a little bit off of these better stories, right? And they're amusing and good for, you know, kind of existential humor that we both laughed at. Like, I wonder if sometimes Lower Decks might run the risk of going in the direction of The Simpsons has now, that kind of zombie Simpsons where it's just sort of a series of mechanically connected floating signifiers that reference other parts of the same franchise, but earlier, but in ways that are sort of shallow and non-contemplative, I guess is the best way to put it. And that's sort of the fear that I have. What do you think? Do you think that there could be a risk that these B plots might kind of like infect sort of other better stories to some degree, or at least kind of break down to some degree the quality of the show we're going to watch?
I think there's always that risk. There's always a bit of a danger of that. But I might be completely misreading this, but what I kind of see, what I feel like might be happening is these A plots, like, they're still hilarious, they're still funny, but they're getting serious, right? They're delving into these characters. And I'm wondering if there's a fear on the part of the writers or the showrunners that, like, we need something really wacky to offset that. You know, in case we want to get all the viewers, right? We want to get the people who are invested, but we want to get the people that are there for the weekly laugh. And hey, if we're too serious here, we got to up the wackiness factor over here. Like, my personal opinion, you don't have to do that. Like, mm-hmm. I think, like, the bit on Orion, I was killing myself laughing at Mariner continually getting stabbed in the shoulder.
That was great.
One of which was even off screen, like after they're going through the pictures at the end, she's like, oh, this is where I got stabbed in the shoulder during the daddy daughter dagger dance.
Right.
I'm like, okay, so it happened at least four times, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like they can do wacky paired with meaningful. If I'm reading that correctly, that maybe they're a little afraid to go too deep, so they have to offset it with a wacky story that has no, you know, real deep stuff. I don't think they need to do that. And I think they need to push against that instinct if that is what's happening.
So I think that may be kind of where they go. Is, I hope, because obviously these episodes are post-production, so writing has ceased on them all. I think as these episodes move forward, we might actually see a bit more of a reliance on that more A-plot writing and maybe a less amount of the B-plot. At least that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I mean, obviously these episodes are in post-production. The writing part is long done. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. So that reminds me of the end of season one, when I think they really did kind of give us a taste for what they can do in their story writing. And when I think of what happens when the one ship tries to go to warp, when the pack lids are stopping them from doing that, they basically rip themselves to pieces. That had a lot of heart. That had a lot of feel. Like, that one really hit me, and it made me be like, oh, wow, these guys can tell a story. And since then, there's been that piece. And I wonder if to some degree this could end up going the way of Dragon Ball. For those who might be familiar with the original series, was sort of just slapstick, funny, kind of goofy storytelling. But it becomes like hyper macho and wildly problematic, but it becomes very serious as time kind of goes on. And I wonder to some degree if that could be a direction that Lower Decks might take in the coming seasons, that there will still be room for the slapstick, goofy humor, but they might not try to go quite as deep into the just wackadoo goofball sort of stuff, just to kind of get those kind of cheap laughs, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I feel like, as you've said, there have been indications and victories when it comes to storytelling in this medium in ways that I probably didn't expect when they announced, you know, a half hour Star Trek sitcom, you know, way back when. I care about these characters so much. And when Tendi is having her heart to heart with her sister, this feels real. There are times that, oddly, like in a weird way that I can't quite explain, I kind of forget that it's animated, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I just get lost in the story and I'm like, wait, this is, huh. And it's so good. So yeah, they have that ability. They've proven it time and time again. I see no reason to completely rely on wackiness. Wackiness will always be there because of that's the show it is. Mm-hmm. But it's paired with great storytelling. And, you know, for everyone out there, and I'm sure there's nobody at this point listening to the episode who hasn't given Lower Decks a chance and isn't into the show. But for those of you who have Star Trek friends out there who write off Lower Decks and say that it's just whatever, think of something like, if you're a Star Wars fan, the Clone Wars, what that show turned into, or Rebels, what that show turned into by the end. And very much same trends with Lower Decks. The medium isn't necessarily the message in this case. I think there are episodes that can move you just as much as, you know, Darmok or The Inner Light or something like that, both that have already happened in this series and that I'm sure there's the potential to yet happen going forward. So,
I mean, I'm still processing that peanut hamper episode, to be honest with you. I don't know what to make of it.
The whole time I was talking, that episode was popping into my head, and I was thinking to myself, there are always exceptions.
Yeah. You're going to have to, you know, make some really good chicken thighs that night.
Oof.
Yeah. You'd like the joke. Sorry. That was a bad pun. I'm sorry.
There's levels to that pun that only hit you after a moment or two.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So what do you think? What do you think is going to happen ahead here in terms of Lower Decks? Do you have any predictions? Do you have any thoughts, any concerns?
Well, one thing that I'm kind of looking forward to or hoping for is like a continuation of the serious personal stories with regards to these characters. But I also want to see stories that are a little more meaningful to the entirety of the setting, the Federation and the politics of it and things that are happening. And we've seen hints of that. I think this ongoing threat of whatever this is, we know that people are taking notice of it, right? Like, it's going to figure into the storyline going forward. There's mention in the most recent episode of, you know, the Federation wanting to build goodwill with the Orions since the loss of one of their ships, right? So this is starting to have this kind of political impact. And I would love to see more stories with our characters, or at least the crew of the Cerritos, kind of at the center of big events, not necessarily something big coming and going to kill everything on Earth or the entire galaxy or whatever. Let Discovery do that. That's fine. Yeah. But, you know, I love geopolitical stuff. I love with the Paclids, right? The whole negotiating with the Klingons and there's something going on there. Like, I want to see more of that import to the Star Trek universe. And let's have this show make a name for itself such that, you know, as many times as they reference other Star Trek shows, I want to see some future Star Trek show reference something big that happened in Lower Decks.
I mean, to some degree, did Strange New Worlds kind of give us a taste of that?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And more. I want to see more of that. You know?
I walk like that now. Like Boimler does his little speed walk there. Like I'm still quite blown away. Just how cartoonish that looked. It was wonderful.
Oh, it was so good. I was thinking the other day about how weird it would have been for Jack Quaid to have like voiced this character for 3 seasons and then have to go back and watch it to see how the animators animated him so that he could emulate that performance in Strange New Worlds. Like, what an odd exercise for an actor, and I kind of love it.
They did a fantastic job.
He really did. Absolutely. Well, favorite character this season? What, I mean, we're not that far in, but we're also almost halfway in, so.
I have an emotional crush on Devon Attendee.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Definitely. It's an idea that, like, I don't necessarily would say that, like, I would find an animated character, like, I don't know. It's an emotional crush. It's an idea of like, I feel you. I totally feel you. Like, I know what you're coming from. Like, to feel a certain level of like frustration with elements of your heritage, but also thinking about the things that make you uniquely yourself and what people like you for, and being unapologetically yourself in certain cases. You don't have to be so guarded. And stuff like that. So, and I've really, really appreciated her arc. And yeah, I just want to give her a big hug, tell her it's okay.
Yeah, right. I'm right there with you. Tendi has been a favorite since very early on for me. And it seems like she keeps giving me new reasons to consider her my favorite character. I love Talyn, and I love that Talyn calls Tendi her friend in this most recent episode, which is like, it's funny. There's only been four episodes and she's only been in three of them. And she feels like a inseparable part of this group now, which blows my mind. So Talyn is fast becoming a favorite of mine as well.
I hope she doesn't end up Star Trek dead.
Yeah, I hope not. I don't think so. I feel like the creators know what they have here.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, for sure. And Boimler. I love Boimler. Always have.
Yeah, I like Boimler's, again, that the him having to learn how to command has been pretty great, because he's still going to be himself in so many ways, I think. But also he really has represented, like, him and Mariner are doing the greatest amount of growth, obviously, as we go forward in all of this. And Tendi's got a big episode. I think Rutherford's going to wind up getting one pretty soon too in that regard. Yeah, no, I would say Tendi's probably my favorite character. I find it interesting that the bridge crew, other than Ransom, haven't played as much of a direct role this time around, which I think is good too, kind of fitting for Lower Decks, right? You're kind of meeting those mid-range officers and they're all kind of being themselves and whatnot. So yeah, I think we're going to have a good end to this. I don't feel like we're going to run out of any steam anywhere, but if things get a little more serious, I wouldn't be terribly surprised.
And to your point, yeah, there is no running out of steam for this show anytime soon. Every time I think that, like, oh, it's getting a little, they do something that I'm like, I hadn't thought of that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And for this season, that has been those promotions and the story possibilities that's opened up. So much fun. So yeah. Well, we're going to be here, of course, for the rest of the Lower Decks season. I'm sure we'll talk more about them as they come out. We've got Empathological Fallacies coming this week.
Yeah, yeah.
And many more great episodes to come, where that will mark the halfway point in the season wildly. Like, I can't believe we're already there. But I can't wait to see where they go and what else happens and what the heck is this big ongoing threat thing? What is that? And I'm sure we'll find out soon. And I don't think we'll be disappointed. I feel like they've got something interesting up their sleeve, at least.
Yeah, I'm here for the ride.
All right. Well, if you'd like to reach out to us, positivelytrek@gmail.com, you can email us there. You can also find our discussion group on Facebook. Just search for Positively Trek, join the discussion group. We'd love to have you. Always great discussions happening there. Patreon.com/positivelytrek. I'm on social media still sometimes. I don't know. I'm not very active, but I notice things. I see you. I lurk. I'm back to lurking. It's the late 90s now again. I lurk.
Yeah. I'm pretty much just keeping up with politics and stuff like that and all of the crazy things that social media creates. So yeah, no, it's a good place to find on Positively Trek. Always very nice people there. I love that discussion group. They're really the only people I've ever really engaged much on Facebook with in the last 6 years. So wow. Yeah, here's to awesome. Technology.
Here, here. Well, thank you all so much for joining us this week. We will see you again in the next episode. Until then, as always, stay positive.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.